Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. When Joe Torre managed the Yankees, one of the smart and unusual things that he did was to hire other former major league managers as his coaches. It showed a sense of security in his leadership, and it put fabulous experience on his staff. Well, Mayor Bloomberg this year did a similar thing. He hired one of the most respected former mayors in America to be his deputy mayor for operations. He is Stephen Goldsmith, who was mayor of Indianapolis from 1992 to 2000 and earned a reputation as a leading innovator in using social entrepreneurship, new technology, public-private partnerships, and sometimes, to the chagrin of unions, privatization to tackle urban problems. Yesterday, for example, on the technology and public-private partnership front, Goldsmith announced that the city is seeking proposals from energy developers to build four low greenhouse gas-emitting hydroelectric facilities on city-owned dams upstate and a cogeneration power plant for heat and electricity on Ward's Island. A Republican, he was also the domestic policy advisor to President Bush's 2000 campaign and has written several books on his approach, including a new one called The Power of Social Innovation. And he wants your help. The city is asking residents for ideas from you about how to save money that can help the city at this time with the least pain. So you can call in with those ideas at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post them to our show page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show as we welcome Deputy Mayor Stephen Goldsmith. Thanks for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
And a belated welcome to New York. You've been here less than half a year. Is it culture shock?
Well, I don't know if it's culture shock. It's an interesting culture, an exciting and dynamic one, and certainly a complex one. So I hope at some point in time to work my way out of City Hall office buildings and see the culture. But it looks pretty exciting from the inside out.
Well, hopefully you'll get some nights and weekends off from time to time. You were telling me off the air you've been here in the past on, you know, travel and on business, but not a whole lot of time spent in the city. Indianapolis is a city of less than a million people. Are some of the lessons you learned as mayor there applicable to New York?
Well, this is a great and exciting city, large, and no city's quite like it. And certainly a city of a million is not the same as a city of 8+ million. At the same time, I've been, whether as mayor of Indianapolis or working with mayors in my my last position of teaching at the Kennedy School up at Harvard, I've seen a lot of really good ideas from other mayors in other places. So there are a fair number of similarities as to the issues. But in terms of scale, complexity, New York is obviously quite different from anywhere else.
Any example that you would pick, anything that you did there or learned there that you're trying to apply here?
Well, the fundamental, I mean, in the introduction you mentioned a number of public-private partnerships, but the fact of the matter is the one thing that drove many of the innovations and most of the cost savings in Indianapolis were labor management partnerships, where we worked with labor unions, their presidents, various locals to increase their discretion of the workers, to increase the power of the workers who actually touched the problem, right, the field workers, and to let them take advantage of their productivity gains as they as their numbers held steady or they came down slightly. Here in New York City, any dramatic savings will have to be done in conjunction with organized labor, and I hope some of those principles will apply here as well.
Tell us about the request for proposals for hydroelectric and cogeneration.
Well, so you can look at the current situation a number of ways, right? One is how one saves money in terms of efficiency. Another is how we do a better job of customer service and our basic responsibilities. Another is who owes fines and other fees to the city that could be better and more smoothly collected. And then another is, what are the big transformative ideas that will allow us to save a substantial amount of money or earn a substantial amount of money that don't require pain from labor or pain from taxpayers. And there's a lot of natural assets in this city and its government. And the upstate water supply is a wonderful advantage, but it may be that we could actually produce electricity from that water supply as well. Not huge amounts, but enough to produce some savings and or perhaps even sell some.
So this government and union partnership idea that you were just talking about, anything along those lines being implemented yet?
Well, we've begun to talk to the labor unions and try to figure out what the opportunities are. New York City is more complex, again, than anywhere else because it's got multiple unions doing multiple things. The management's in the unions and the labor is in the unions, and so you have to kind of work that through. I hope what we can do is say, look, and this is the assignment the mayor gave to me, which is that we want to keep up the quality of services at the same time we operate inside our budget. And to the extent that we have too many supervisors or the supervisor spans of control can be enlarged, that's what we're trying to do in the sanitation department, and so that the basic services stay in place and we kind of smooth out those supervisory areas. So we're trying to do many of those things across government.
You mentioned the sanitation department in Indianapolis. You made your name partly by privatizing trash pickup as well as sewage treatment. Do you think that could work in either of those agencies here?
Well, let me I don't want to spend a lot of time in Indianapolis, but, you know, the privatization of solid waste pickup got covered in Indianapolis, but actually what that was a competition. We drew franchises, the public workers bid against the private workers. The public workers said, look, here's how we can do our work much more efficiently. You redesign the trucks. We need fewer managers. You change the routes. And then they said, we'll do all that work, but we want to share in the part of the gain savings. So I think that the incentive structure that worked in Indianapolis with respect to organized labor can work in solid waste here. I'm looking more not at broad privatizations of existing services, but public-private partnerships that take our labor plus technology and capital investments and produce savings for the city.
Deputy Mayor Stephen Goldsmith, our guest on WNYC. And again, you can call in with your suggestions for how the city might save money at this time of budget crunch, 212-433-WNYC. The city wants to know, 212-433-9692. And let's take one right now. Peter in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What you got?
Turnout lights in public buildings, especially schools when they're not needed. At one school I'm familiar with, LaGuardia Arts in the Upper West Side, escalators are running 24/7, so a simple foot pedal would turn them on and off. Motors wouldn't burn out as frequently, and it would save a lot of current.
Peter, thank you very much. Here's a related one before I get your reaction from Murray in Brooklyn. Murray, you're on WNYC.
LEDs throughout the city buildings, and also throughout the MPA, LED PA light bulbs, would save you 60% on your electric, as well as save you tremendously on maintenance.
Thank you very much. A couple of energy efficiency ideas there.
This is great. If I'm just quiet and people call in, the budget will be balanced by the time I leave the show. This is really good. I mean, these are perfect. We'll take both of these up. The fact of the matter is that citizens care a lot about their city. We've got we have a little icon up on nyc.gov. We invite folks to go to. We've got 2,000 ideas so far, and many of them, like the last two callers, are excellent ideas. We'll look at both of those. You know, one of the things we're studying now, the first caller's question raises, is each building, the tenants in that building, need to be responsible for their energy budget, right? So the city has a one energy budget, but when people are responsible in a building for their own costs, then they take better care. So we're trying to unpack that energy budget, have it school by school, building by building, so we can save. And we'll take up both of those suggestions right away.
Last week, Mayor Bloomberg did announce the latest budget shortfall and a plan to eliminate 10,000 jobs, including 6,000 teachers, hundreds of police officers, some child welfare workers, and some others. At least fire and police out of those come under your jurisdiction, I believe. Maybe they all do in some way. Were you in on how to best save that money?
Yes. Those are civilians in the police department, not police officers.
Civilian workers in the police department. You're exactly right.
I'm a little sensitive to that because the goal here is to do everything we can to maintain the force in really tough times. Well, we're a couple billion dollars off and getting worse. And I'm going to come back to why that is in a second. I worked with OMB and Mark Page and tried to go through the various departments, figure out where we could harvest savings from not filling open jobs and the like, a limited number of layoffs. The teacher thing, the mayor said, look, we need to make sure that we don't hurt the quality of education. There are city dollars that are flowing, more city dollars actually are flowing in education. The problem with education is that there is $800 million of stimulus money in the education budget. It's going away. The city is filling some of that hole, but can't fill all the hole, and therefore the loss of teachers. The city is still depending on state aid, trying to hold that number where it is. So that's a really big issue, the education issue. Just one quick second. When the mayor's first year in office, so the pensions of New York City employees are set by the state legislature. They are not set by the mayor. They're not set by the city council. And obviously there's been a reduced return on the investment portfolio, and there's been an increase in benefits. So the first year that Mayor Bloomberg was here, about $1.2 billion of the operating dollars were spent fixing the pension hole. This year, it'll be almost $8 billion. That's wow. $8 billion that could have gone for teachers and police officers and firefighters and sanitation workers and the like, nonprofits that do good work, that now has to go to pay for obligations for workers who have already retired. And that number keeps going up. And so the crunch that the mayor is trying to work through is how to discharge these obligations over which he has no control and still maintain services at the same time.
So it's not just that the economy isn't coming back, producing tax revenues that close the budget gap. It's that the amount that the city has to contribute from what would be year-to-year operating expenses into the pension fund for current retirees keeps going up.
Exactly. So the New York City economy is better than most of the rest of the country, substantially better than many other places in the country. And, you know, tax revenues could be better, but they're not catastrophically bad. But expenses are up, and uncontrollable expenses are up.
Is there any, you say uncontrollable, is there anything you can do about this?
Well, we need to get a handle on, you know, the state constitution prevents reducing the benefits of folks who either hired today or already retired. There are some things that the legislature can do to fix pensions going forward. There are some things that the legislature can do to make adjustments to kind of special payments they require the city to make. They can give us a little more authority over health care costs, all of those things. So in the next session in Albany, the city will have a number of reform suggestions. We're very encouraged by the language and approach of the governor-elect, and hopefully this will be a chance in timing. Because basically, if you think about it, what will happen if the legislature doesn't give us the tools to reform is that every year we'll have to lay off employees to pay those who used to work. And at some point in time, you know, the high quality of New York City services that everyone here enjoys and has enjoyed for some time will begin to slip. That's not the case now, but inevitably, if we can't make the reforms, that'll happen.
Does this mean that people who are retired and listening right now, retired from city jobs, should fear that their pensions or health benefits are going to get cut?
The pensions of folks who retired are constitutionally protected. And this crisis is really not theirs. I mean, they made a bargain. They took a job. They were received an offer. Now, you know, whether in retrospect the offer that the state gave them was the right offer is something many of us would dispute, but they have that. There are some changes that would not harm retirees in terms of health care that should be made. It would help us kind of get that under control, that are very extraordinary to New York State and New York City. So I think we should anticipate some changes, but retirees shouldn't expect that their pension checks, per se, would be changed.
New York City Deputy Mayor Stephen Goldsmith, my guest on WNYC, among other things, collecting your ideas for how the city can save money in these tough times. Bob in Brooklyn has one. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Brian.
What you got?
Oh, hi. Yeah, hi, Mr. Goldsmith. I was a civilian employee of the NYPD back in the 70s, and I worked in a police station. I'm very well acquainted with this. There was an attempt at that time to try to use one-man police cars on patrol called solo cars, not for every patrol car, but for many of them, because, you see, many crimes are reported in the past. It's not an emergency situation. Even missing persons reports, there's absolutely no emergency, and you have two police officers responding on patrol to these crimes where it's just a matter of writing a report. And the most common crime is burglary. 95% are residential, and 95% of the residential burglaries happen in the daytime. So the victim comes home. It's a non-emergency situation. So the complainants, the victims...
And one officer could respond. Bob, I'm going to leave it there just to get enough voices on here today, and we'll go through a few, and then Deputy Mayor, you'll respond. Alan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning. Since most of the benefit from subsidized transit stops in high-rise districts goes to the buildings that would be unusable without the subway service, it seems that the balance of tax support for these subsidies is too much on the backs of strap hangers. Why not have something like business improvement districts that would include among the possible amenities continuing the subsidy for the subway service at the bottoms of these high-rises and have a special zone assessment around those buildings akin to a BID to capture the special benefit these buildings receive.
Alan, thank you very much. And June, June hung up. I'll ask June's question. In fact, we have it on our comments page from someone else as well. Jay writes, how about charging cyclists for licenses and registration fees for their bicycles? That should bring in some revenue. All right, we've got three on the table. How about one cop cars?
I'm the deputy mayor. I'm not the police commissioner. So that's my first comment. We have a terrific police commissioner. Second, it was tried, and there are one police officer cars in many large urban areas. There may be some districts where the commissioner would like to take, might like to attempt that. The union has some thoughts about it, but there is no doubt but that there are some responses in some areas of the city that could be done by one officer cars, and I think the commissioner is open to looking at everything, although this one hasn't been raised recently, but it's been a subject that has been ongoing.
And the buildings with proximity to transit?
Yeah, these ideas are you have a great show. These ideas are great. So there is, for new a new development, a kind of a concept that you have transit-aided development. So if you have a subway stop in a place, and it's going to create value for the buildings that are around it. That does create value. Without that stop, the buildings have less value. And it's legitimate then to create a district to take part of that increment into generally the capital budget of that project. Whether you could do that on the operating side is an interesting one, particularly with existing buildings, but it's a fascinating idea and one we at least ought to think about.
And as fast as the city is getting into the bicycle enabling business, how about licenses for bikes?
Yeah, I don't know. I think we have a lot of maybe too many licenses and permits in the city. And using that as a revenue source, I have some anxiety about. I would say that, we could do a better job with traffic enforcement and enforcement against bicyclists that don't follow the rules and write more tickets for that. Now, so I think we could produce the conduct we want to produce without the regulatory apparatus. So I'll take that one under advisement.
Are you in the involved in the bike sharing proposal that's out today? For people who haven't heard it, thousands of bikes for rent with pickup and drop-off points all around Manhattan with, from what I hear, private companies making the investment, but the city sharing in the profits. Is that a Goldsmith idea?
That's a DOT idea from the creative DOT commissioner. And basically, her approach is the following. We've created bike lanes, and the bike lanes could be used more. And there are a lot of folks who go short distances, and around the world and in several cities in the U.S., there are bike share programs. The city doesn't have the money to invest in bike share programs, and if a commercial operator could produce one where the bikes are safe and secure and clean, then she's interested in getting the proposal. So this is, for folks listening to the show, this is not about more bike lanes per se. This is about use of the existing bike lanes for tourists and others going short distances, local residents. It's an interesting proposal. Let's see what comes in and then decide how good it is.
You say it's not about more bike lanes, I understand. But bike lanes seem to be providing almost a cultural crucible moment in the city right now. Heated debates over lanes on the Upper West Side and Prospect Park West and Borough Park. The city has added about 250 miles of them in the last 4 years. Will we see another 250 miles by 2014?
I've learned early in my short career in New York City that if there's any subject I really don't want to address, it's bike lanes. I've made a couple comments that I thought were pretty harmless, which have led to kind of thousands of blogs and tweets. And I've noticed the ongoing series of articles in the last couple days in city papers. And I think that from the mayor's perspective and the commissioner's perspective at DOT, that the goal is to create a more livable city and to figure out how to do that, balancing the legitimate needs of motorists with environmental aspects and opportunities of bicyclists. I think those are often difficult trade-offs where reasonable people can disagree. You're going to have to be sensitive to seniors and others and congestion issues, but it's a much more creative and livable city today than it was when the mayor started or when the mayor before him started, and so we'll see what happens.
We have a few minutes left with the new deputy mayor for operations, Stephen Goldsmith, former mayor of Indianapolis, former domestic policy advisor to the 2000 Bush campaign, among other things. Did you reach out to Mayor Bloomberg to apply for this job? I heard that you were happily teaching at Harvard and Mayor Bloomberg came to you.
I didn't reach out to him for the job. In fact, I did this book that you mentioned on power of social innovation. And as I was doing the book, I was the chairman in D.C. for President Obama, first President Bush and then President Obama, the Corporation National Community Service, the parent of AmeriCorps and Vista. And I was teaching at Harvard. And I was doing a lot of work with social entrepreneurs that were doing really good work, Teach for America, Habitat for Humanity, City Year, and the like. And I wrote this book. And as I wrote the book, I saw that more and more of these folks are doing business in New York City, in education and all over. And the mayor had this agenda. And so I wrote about the mayor in the book. The mayor did the foreword for the book. And that led to the mayor saying, well, your judgment must be great because you made New York City look so good. How about a job? So I said, mayors don't work for mayors. This doesn't work. And he said, look, this is the greatest city in the world. And if you really care about urban spaces, you have to take this job. So I said, you're right. Sign me up. And here I am.
It sounds like you were surprised, but not that hesitant.
That both of those are true.
Today's the day that State Education Commissioner David Steiner has his panel on the Kathy Black Schools Chancellor waiver. It's another can of worms that I'm sure you don't want to talk about, but another person who the mayor approached for a top job rather than applying. Do you know Kathy Black?
I've met her since the nomination.
And I guess my question to you is, to accept this appointment with her total lack of relevant education experience or life experience, do we have to accept the idea that a manager is a manager is a manager, and it's completely transferable from anything to anything?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. I would answer it in the following way, slightly differently. If you have a large, complicated enterprise, particularly one that's in a lot of financial stress, you want to make sure the folks at the top have the right set of skills. So skill one would be business management, right-sizing the budget, helping produce the resources at the school level that are necessary. Job two is pedagogy. So you want to make sure you have a terrific chief pedagogy officer, whatever it might be called, and a chief and a terrific person at the top. And so my comment would be, so long as those skills are in the enterprise, that you have the right set of folks. And today in New York City public schools, if you didn't have a brilliant manager at the top, we have very, very serious problems, much more serious than this potential 6,000 layoffs.
And you did mention, and I mentioned your book, The Power of Social Innovation. In fact, when we first tried to get you on the show, it was the spring. The book had just come out. We thought, Stephen Goldsmith, interesting guy. Let's talk about the power of social innovation. We contacted the publisher, and then all of a sudden there was some mystery. These interviews were put on hold. And then, of course, we learned that you were coming as deputy mayor. So you at least get a book plug out of this deal. What's the thesis of the book? Is it just all the things we've been talking about today?
Because for people who are suspicious, I don't get any royalties from the book. That was part of the deal, coming to work for the mayor. But go buy the book anyway. The theory is as following very quickly, and Mike Bloomberg lives this and practices it, which is that to create a terrific, vibrant city, government has responsibilities, but the nonprofit sector provides a lot of value as well. So the issue is, how together do they work together to produce transformative social innovation, help for those who are homeless, help for those who need jobs, help for those who need a good education. Linda Gibbs, a deputy mayor in New York City, who's in charge of the homeless services and the social services and the health services, has a whole set of very creative innovations she's done with the mayor. So the thesis of the book is, when these two sectors come together, the government sector, the nonprofit sector, and they're focused on innovation as contrasted to the status quo, they can produce transformative opportunities for struggling New Yorkers.
Mayor Bloomberg is in his last term. I think everybody, including him, agrees this is going to be the last term. Are you interested in that job potentially?
No. Thank you very much.
So we leave it there with the new deputy mayor for operations, Stephen Goldsmith, and the author of the new book, The Power of Social Innovation. Thank you very much, and I hope we can catch up with you from time to time as you do your job.
Thanks. Good being here.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come. Stay with us.